And my mom and I are, you know, I'm driving and talking, and my mom says, oh, you know, it's so great you're into science. That's awesome that you still read about science. And then she says to me, without missing a beat, it's too bad you didn't go into science because you really could have done something with your life. And then my dad, trying to ameliorate the situation, says, oh no, Mina, he's only 40 years old. This is 3 years ago. He still has time to do something with this life. He thought he was making it better. And my mom says, no, he's too old, but maybe the kids can do something with their lives.
Welcome to Growth Unscripted. The badass professionals. The real questions. The truth behind how top execs got to where they are and how you can follow in their footsteps. Now here's your host, Betts CEO and founder, Carolyn Betts.
Welcome back to Growth Unscripted. Today we have Nick Mehta, the CEO of Gainsight. Thanks for joining me, Nick.
It's so awesome to be here. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, well, it's so funny because I was looking at your LinkedIn and on it says, wannabe Pittsburgh Steelers player. And it's, you have the background going on with the Pittsburgh Steelers jersey. So I'd just love to hear a little bit about your background in Pittsburgh and where you grew up.
Sure. It's a tough time. We are recording this in mid-January. The Steelers just lost in the most embarrassing fashion probably in our history in the playoffs. So it is an absolutely tough time to be a Steelers fan. But I grew up in Pittsburgh, which is where the Steelers thing comes from. And I kind of grew, as we'll talk about more, I grew up around technology. My dad was actually an entrepreneur, never did anything big, but ran some small companies, and kind of, I had computers, you know, surrounding me at all of my childhood, like many of them. I was building them. I was playing games on them. I was programming. And so kind of, I guess, always hoped to end up in this crazy tech world that we're in now.
Yeah. Well, that's great. And you know, I love the passion. I'm a 49ers fan, which, you know, also tough year. And, you know, I still remember being like early days of Betts and Gainsight. And, you know, what one of the most fun things that I ever think I experienced, well, a lot of things, right, as you were building Gainsight and really creating that category, was when you hosted a bunch of us at the Giants game. And I don't know if you remember that, but you know, it was super cool to get out there and the conferences and just the community that you created around the brand. And I had the opportunity to experience it, right? Like side by side as, you know, somebody that from the sidelines just got to see you guys blow up. And I would love to hear more about it from your perspective of all the amazing things that you did to really build that out.
Yeah. So community is a big part of our story, and really not just Gainsight's story, but the story of the customer success field. I'm sure most people know that customer success today is like a very big profession and rapidly growing, you know, as any business that has any kind of recurring revenue like SaaS or subscription or cloud, you realize you can't just focus on getting new customers. You got to keep the ones you have. Now, when we started in 2013, that wasn't true. Customer success was a tiny little profession. A few companies had it. It was just getting started. And one of the things we realized early on actually was that people in the profession were dying to meet each other. Because, you know, anytime you're in this new thing and you're kind of on your own, like what you want is to be able to talk to people that are going through your same shared experience. And this is true, like in our personal lives, and definitely true at work, right? You're going through something, you feel kind of lonely, you'd love to talk to people about it. Over the years, many, 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 many people in coming to our community have described it as kind of group therapy, right? Just like being able to just talk about your problems and your challenges amongst people with kindred spirits. And so from the early days, we really focused not on marketing Gainsight, but on creating this customer success community. And, you know, as any early startup, it starts out with, you know, happy hour in your office where some people come in and, you know, it's like, so you get the Safeway wine and cheese tray and the vegetable tray there. But then eventually, you know, we decided we wanted to actually host a conference, which eventually became multiple conferences, all about the customer success community. Not about Gainsight as a tech company, not about our product or a roadmap, but about the community of CS professionals coming together, meeting each other, learning from each other. And that's what we call Pulse, which started in 2013. And we were hoping to have like 50 people in this little hotel ballroom, and we ended up with 300 people. And then over the years, that thing exploded. The last time we did it in person, since we're in the pandemic right now, was 2019 in May. And we had, you know, 6,000 people in San Francisco, Moscone Center. And last year, we in 2020, we did it virtual and we had 23,000 people join the event. And it was sort of just this incredible growth in the CS community as the profession grew and started doing it in London and did it in Sydney and have done doing one in India. You know, we've done them all over the world now. And it's just amazing to see this community come together. All we have to do is, you know, organize it, host it, get some, you know, nowadays the food's slightly better than the Safeway vegetable tray and just get out of the way and let people talk to each other.
Yeah. You know, I went to the one down by the water, right by the ballpark, that like, that was like such a cool venue. And you guys had the food trucks out there and, you know, and people really did surround the community. And, you know, it's interesting that you mentioned the group therapy, right? Because customer success and account management, you know, what it was kind of called before you guys really created this category, you know, it's kind of like the don't F it up crew, right? The sales team brings it on. The product, you know, may or may not be exactly where it needs to be. And it's kind of this continuous evolution. And then, you know, you just pile it on the customer success team. And, you know, so I think the community and obviously the technology that you created that really helps people, you know, to not, you know, F it up, I guess. You know, it was really, really fun and cool to see the community. And obviously from Betts, like we started as a sales recruiting company, right? And now we do go to market. But the amount of people that now come to us for customer success is unbelievable, right? It's like this whole thing. And it sounds a lot easier than it actually is, right? You just keep the customers happy.
Well, yeah, don't F it up is a great, you know, it is a great way to describe, you know, the early days of customer success, you know, because you had all the everyone else doing their regular job and then the CS people having to figure out how to make these customers successful. And like you said, sometimes the product doesn't work or sales, you know, expectations were higher than the reality or whatever. And over time, companies get more disciplined about it. So what they do over time is figure out customer success is everyone's job. So it's not just on the CSM team, right? But you described it very well in terms of how people start.
Right. And yeah, so your first company, right, was chipshot.com. You started at Harvard. And, you know, so obviously you mentioned your father was an entrepreneur. And so you definitely had that DNA. But, you know, what was the company? Fill us in on, you know, the starting a company while in school and then, you know, bringing it over to Silicon Valley. What an adventure.
Yeah, totally. So, I mean, I'm old. So this is like a late 1990s story. So quite a while ago, but I was in college.
How old are you, Nick?
I'm 43 years old. So I don't know. I guess I don't know.
I have still a four in front of my age too.
The four is it's a big transition, but you know, I'm on TikTok, so I feel like I'm trying to stay young.
Oh, you're so cool. you have kids though, right?
It's all the kids. So yeah. So, you know, we in college and then, you know, at Harvard in the late 90s, I was, you know, basically studying computer science in a class and met a friend who ended up becoming one of my best friends in the world. And he actually was on the Harvard golf team. And he basically was like, hey, you know, he's a natural entrepreneur. And he's like, had this idea for basically building like an Amazon for golf. Now this is like late 90s. Amazon itself is a tiny startup, right? So the idea was, okay, you know, people, golfers have a lot of stuff they buy, put it online on the web, you know, pretty simple. But back then, as you know, anything on the web was like a new idea. You know, now that sounds like, oh, that's just, there's a million of those. But back then, it was a new idea. And so we started in college and actually like ran it out of our dorm rooms. You know, there were four of us who ended up being co-founders. And then basically after college, we all had job offers to do the traditional stuff, you know, investment banking, consulting, whatever, you know, whatever job, you know, post-college, you know, and we obviously very privileged to go to Harvard and have parents paying for, you know, all that stuff. So very lucky that we were in this path all together, right? Most people don't have that privilege. But we basically were, you know, kind of thinking about, do we do this startup and keep going with it? Because it was starting to do well, or go take the traditional kind of post-college job. And we basically decided to chase the dream of the startup, moved to California in 1998 when we graduated. And actually my co-founder, the guy who kind of had the original idea, he grew up in Saratoga, California. So kind of near San Jose. And so we actually literally moved in with his parents in their house and lived in their guest bedroom and worked in their garage and this startup. And it was super fun. And this is like early internet. So we were literally having to like, there's no Amazon Web Services. You know, I mean, to like host your own servers, we're like having to like, you know, people are buying these products and we had to ship them to customers and box them up. And it was super, super fun. And we ended
scrappy.
Up, I ended up raising money from Sequoia, which is a big, you know, well-known VC firm, and just got totally lucky. We didn't even know who they were. And then the company actually took off and almost went public in 2000. And so we were all 20, you know, 1 years old, 22 years old, and calculating how much money we'd be worth and how we would never have to work again. And then unfortunately we missed the IPO window. And then as many people have read about, the stock market crashed, that kind of dot-com crash, and ended up selling the business, but didn't make any money because we raised too much money. And so it's kind of a full, like by the time I was 22, 23 years old, full end-to-end experience of the highs and lows of business. And it was incredible. We had TV commercials and billboards and magazine covers. And yeah, it was all, it feels like a dream. It's kind of another life. And so, yeah, after that, obviously I had the fortune and misfortune of like the first job I had working for myself. So actually it was really hard to be like, oh, I have to work for somebody else now and like get a regular job. And like, obviously I'm again, very privileged, but I basically joined a larger company, a company called Veritas that got bought by Symantec. So big kind of enterprise tech company, and as a product manager, because I was, you know, technical. And yeah, and then kind of worked my way up and eventually ran a division of that company, which was great, but then kind of got back to my roots of sort of wanting to do my own thing, which is what I've been doing last couple companies for the last, gosh, it's probably 12 years now. So
yeah. We talked earlier about all the fun stuff that you did, but you know, one of the things that really stood out to me personally with you, but also just like your brand as a human is, you know, you're known to be a fun CEO, right? And the value that you have surrounding running a human-centric company. I think that especially nowadays where, you know, we're all working remote and human connection is, you know, harder now than it's ever been, you know? And, you know, I would just love to hear about the ethos and where this really stemmed from and what you guys have done, you know, now, you know, during this crazy time.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. It actually, it's funny. So this is my third company, I guess I've run. And I've always had passion for like values and culture. And like, for example, with Gainsight, when we launched the company, you know, in the very beginning, we created our company values and we've been very values oriented. You know, one of our values is golden rule, treat people the way you want to be treated. Another one's what we call childlike joy, bring the kid in you to work every day. Another one is Shoshin, which means beginner's mind. So bring your beginner's mind, everything you do. So we have these very specific values and that's always been true. But what you're alluding to is, you know, a few years ago, I guess 3.5 years ago, actually, I'll tell you the story is kind of funny. And you have to have some background, which is I'm outside of work. The thing I'm actually into besides family and football is I'm actually really into like science and philosophy and like really weird stuff. Like what is consciousness? What is time? What's the nature of reality? And I read these very esoteric books about things like that. And my mom actually, she grew up in India. My mom, I'm Indian American. So mom and dad from India. And my mom actually studied physics growing up and actually wanted to go into science. And, you know, back then the opportunities for women weren't great in anywhere, but in India, in this case, weren't great. So she just never got the opportunity, but she loved that I'm into science. And so 3.5 years ago, I was driving my parents to dinner and just like the three of us were going to like PF Chang's or something. And my mom's sitting in the passenger seat. And my parents, if you had to get a visual of them, if you've seen the TV show Seinfeld, they're like the Costanzas, George's parents, but Indian. That's who they are. So they're like amazing, but they're constantly like bickering. They're very direct and they're just wonderful, but like just, you know, they're force of nature. And my mom and I are, you know, I'm driving and talking and my mom says, oh, you know, it's so great. You're into science. That's awesome that you still read about science. And then she says to me without missing a beat, it's too bad you didn't go into science because you really could have done something with your life. And then my dad, trying to ameliorate the situation, says, oh no, Mina, he's only 40 years old. This is 3 years ago. He still has time to do something with this life. He thought he was making it better. And my mom says, no, he's too old, but maybe the kids can do something with their lives. And the reason I tell you that story is I think all of us have that question. Like, what are we doing with our lives? That this is the eternal human condition. And when you like grew up like me, where like my mom basically idolized like Albert Einstein and scientists. I literally had to grow up with an Albert Einstein poster above my bed that my parents put there. And my dad idolized like literally, I remember him showing me a magazine cover of Bill Gates as the richest man of the world at the time. And he's like, I'd love for you to be someone like this, right? And when you're like, okay, the bar is insanely high. And you're like, okay, well, I'm running an enterprise tech company, a software company. It's great. It's not like we're curing cancer, or like flying to Mars. You know, what's the purpose of what we all do? And so what we went through as a company exercise is, what is our purpose? Like, why do we do what we do, right? Because we're not going to go claim that we're changing the world or making lives better in some way based on just software, right? But what are we trying to do? And what we realized is, at our company, the people at Gainsight aren't just motivated by the software we build or kind of, you know, the industry we serve. We're motivated by like trying to do business in a different way, because a lot of companies, I think actually a lot of us in the business world have been taught what I think of as kind of a lie, which is, the lie is that to be a great business person, you need to take all your feelings and leave them at the door. You need to put on a suit of armor. You need to not be yourself. You need to be tough. You need to forget about people's feelings. You need to be brutal. And that's just like what's reinforced in movies, in books, in blog posts. A lot of the heroes that are put up there are like that. And a lot of the images that we have of an entrepreneur, it's not some nice, compassionate person, right? It's the, you know, we've seen the various movies and books. And I don't think that's the only path. And we believe that there's an alternate path. I'm not saying that you can't be successful that way. Clearly you can. There's a lot of examples. But I think there's a lot of examples on the other side that just don't, they're not made for TV examples. So they don't get broadcast as much, right? Of people that are authentically who they are, really just try to be themselves and try to be vulnerable to other people and try to be compassionate and practice the golden rule. There's a lot of leaders like that too. And we decided, we call that human first leadership, right? Really just, we're all human beings first, whether it's the, whether it's your customer, they're a human being, your employees are human beings, your, the people that left you are human beings, your competitors are human beings too. Don't demonize them. Don't think of them as like something beyond who they are. They're just people. And what does that mean practically? Well, you know, like when somebody leaves your company, a lot of CEOs are, they're terrible about this. Like, they're like, you're dead to me. I'm never talking to you again. And honestly, I'm like, the first time when somebody calls me, it's somebody resigned from Gainsight yesterday. I called them and I said, first thing is congratulations. Well, first thing is thank you for everything you've done at Gainsight. And second is congratulations. I'm really excited for your next thing. And third is, you know, love to learn sort of how we can continue to get better. And it's like, we somehow forget that all these entities we deal with are just human beings, whether it's the customer or the employee. And so our purpose at Gainsight, what we kind of concluded was, we want to be living proof that you can win in business while being human first. And the idea is basically, it's not antithetical to winning, to being your human self. It actually is completely aligned with winning. Now, we don't have to be the greatest of all time. I don't think we will be, but we can be a winner and we can be, do it in a human way. And maybe other companies will do that. And I'd just say, there's a lot of other companies that are sort of adopting a similar mindset. We're not the only one. Salesforce does a great job of this in a lot of ways, right? But that's what we're really passionate about and sort of what drives us.
Yeah. I think it's so cool. And at Betts, our first and leading value is people first. And
yeah, people first. That's awesome.
Yeah,
I love
and
that.
And so I can't imagine running a business, right, where you have to come in and just crack the whip all the time. And, you know, I think that, yeah, over time, right, like, because I think as a business leader, you're hard driving, right? You want all your customers to be happy. You want all your employees to be happy. You have these expectations that are like sometimes unrealistic of what actually the real world is. And, you know, so I think that if you go back to that value and really check in with it, and, you know, one thing that we've talked about in the past is, you know, the conflict between customers and employees, right? And, you know, where a customer may not be satisfied and, you know, the employee and, you know, you know, I know how I've been handling it and how we're handling it at Betts, but I'm just curious at Gainsight, given that you guys have so many customers and like the whole meta factor of like customer success and like the, you know, all the things that you guys do there, really curious to hear, you know, how as a company you guys handle those tough situations.
Totally. Yeah. When that situation, when like the client is unhappy, but your team has their own point of view. And I think one thing I really believe in is, it's very possible that like two things can be true at the same time, even if they seem at odds with each other, right? That's the underlying principle that I've adopted or believe. And so for me, like, I'll give you an example. Literally just a few weeks ago, we actually lost a client and it's a bummer. And at Gainsight, we try to be, we really focus on customer success, obviously, given what we do. And this client, you know, I think that in hindsight, I think the reality is this client, our product is not a fit for them. That's just the bottom line reality. It's just today, not a fit. They probably agree with that. And they're just, their use case are too different from our typical client, which is, that's fine. And you learn those things along the way. I listened to a call that we, you know, we use some call recording, you know, kind of gong.io. Many people use software like that. And I'd listened to a call like a month or two before. And, you know, there's this really tough call between like one of our team members and the customer. And you could tell it was very strained. Like, you know, one of those calls, you could tell, like, it's just like, oh, brutal to listen to, right? And after the call, well, one thing that happened in the call is our team member stood up for herself, right? And she actually was like, I don't feel like you're treating me in a way that is the way you'd want to be treated, and something to that effect. And, you know, I reached out to the teammate and I said, I'm really proud of you for standing up for our values and standing up for human first and yourself. And I reached out to the customer and said, I'm really sorry that our company put you in this situation. They're both right. Like, the customer is just trying to do their job. Gainsight's like one of 1,000 things they have to deal with. They probably got handed to it by somebody else. They didn't want us to deal with this. We probably, product didn't do what they wanted. I don't know what happened, right? And then the teammate, like, they just got assigned a discount. It's probably failed from the start. They've got a million other clients to deal with, right? So they're both right, you know? And I think that's something that we often are trying to find out who's right and who's wrong. And I actually think it's very possible that multiple people can be right, even if it feels like they're at odds with each other.
Yeah, it's really interesting, right? And I love that perspective of, you know, nobody's wrong in this situation. Everyone comes from their own perspective. And, you know, let's just do what works for everybody. And you guys ended up parting ways with the customer. And, you know, it sounds like it was the right call. And, you know, this is something we've been really dealing with at Bets, right? And especially with the evolution of business and that mindset of, you know, just really caring about people. And, you know, I think, you know, a lot of our Bets, you know, we do sales, right? And a lot of hard charging type A personalities looking to, you know, get as much revenue in the door, hire the absolute right people. And, you know, some of the leader, you know, everyone has a different leadership style. And at Bets, you know, we definitely have very much of a, you know, human first ethos, and not all of our customers have that. And, you know, one of the things that's a blessing for people that come to work for us, but also can be really challenging is, you know, we throw them in the deep end, right? They immediately start managing accounts, working, not immediately, but, you know, within the first 6 months to a year, they are hip pocket with CROs, executives, et cetera, helping them build their teams. And sometimes, you know, they get a lot of feedback, which feedback always such a gift, right? You know, you get to can be continuously improving, but the way the feedback is delivered is sometimes, and, you know, so we're putting a process into place where escalation will happen if customers are not communicating with our employees, you know, in a constructive way. And it's just because it gets to the point, and that, you know, especially because, like, as a CEO, right, you have super thick skin, right? And sometimes you're like, that didn't sound that bad to me. But at the same time, it did to that person. And that person showing up every day, busting their ass to, you know, make it happen. And what, you know, how terrible to have it handed to you by a customer. So anyway.
I love that you're doing that. You have to look out for both sides. That's so well done. That's really great.
Well, and, you know, one of the things that stood out to me, and you mentioned this earlier, but the one thing that you didn't mention about the things that you're passionate about, and I see this list here, right? Family, football, philosophy, which you mentioned, physics, fashion, which, you know, obviously you always look so fashionable and well put together in the blazer, even at the baseball game, by the way, and feminism. And you mentioned your mother, but obviously as a female founder and somebody who has built a company that has, you know, more women than men, which is rare in Silicon Valley, I would love to hear about this. Is like, you know, the top five things-ish that you're passionate about, six it looks like. But yeah, tell me about that.
Yeah, I mean, I think broadly, and I think all society in the last few years, it's been incredible that there's just so much of an awakening awareness to, like, the lack of equality of opportunity out there, you know, and I think that we all, there was a lot of, again, going back to the lies we tell ourselves, there's all these lies about, oh, you know, it's based on what people naturally want, or this, you know, this just is sort of what it's meant to be. And now we're realizing, no, actually, it's just because, like, people haven't been given the opportunity. Women haven't been given the opportunity. Underrepresented minorities haven't been given the opportunity. It's not a question of, like, skills or will. It's just a question of opportunity. And I think as a leader, you have a chance, one of the biggest things you have a chance to do is actually shape opportunity, you know? And I think that there's two reasons why. One reason why is really going back to human first. It's like, well, we're all human beings first. We all want to be treated as who we are, not just based on sort of what our external, you know, gender or whatever is, right? We want to be treated as a human being, as our individual selves. And so this is core to our culture and values and very important to me personally, as in a small way, trying to make some difference, right? And then also, we all know it's great for business because, like, the truth is there's incredibly talented women and Black Americans and, you know, LGBTQ people, and there's talented people all around, right? And so many companies consciously, unconsciously biased towards a very small subset of all the talented people. So it's great for business, but it's also like kind of ties to our values. And so something that we've worked on forever, and we've never, I would say we're not perfect at all, but we put a ton of thought into it of everything from, you know, who's speaking up in meetings and what are you doing to encourage multiple people speaking up and encourage actively moderating the discussion so multiple people get to speak and making sure you don't have people interrupting each other all the time. And you know, a lot of things we've done over the years, like one thing we did, which is actually still pretty memorable, was we had an offsite in some, you know, kind of hotel somewhere where people are sitting around in these circular tables. And, you know, we basically like handed out 3 cards or 5 cards to each person. And, you know, there were men and women in the room. And we basically said, okay, each time you speak up, put a card in the center of the table. And then if you run out of cards, doesn't mean you're not allowed to talk, but just realize you probably used up a lot of the voice and just look around and see if other people have a lot of cards left, right? Something like that, that kind of thing to just like keep getting people to share their voice. And then obviously looking at, you know, our practices around hiring. And, you know, it's interesting, like in the recruiting world, right? Like, you know, you as a hiring manager have a lot of influence over, you know, working with your recruiters, internal, external, what people you're talking to. I remember a story like years ago where I was working with a search firm, not Bet, somebody else. And it was an exec search firm. And they basically, I was looking for an HR leader. And we somehow like the first 10 candidates, this leader, the company showed me were all men. What? And nothing gets that, by the way. That's great.
Like, okay.
Right. But I was like, and I told him I wanted a diverse slate of candidates. And I was like, this is HR. It should not that be that hard to find talented women to be able to interview as well. Cause I want to hire the best candidate, but I want to talk to like a diverse population of people so I can really see all the people. And until I actually drew the hard line, I was like, look, you have to show me a diverse population. I'm not going to like talk to you anymore until you get me one. And then they did. And then it turned out like Carol Mahoney, this amazing woman's been with us 4 years. And by the way, she was the best candidate out of all the candidates we met, not just like the best woman, the best candidate we had, right? And so, you know, there's so much you can do in terms of how you think about your hiring processes and also the spec. You know, one other thing I learned is like, you know, if you define a spec super narrowly, like if you're like, must have worked in this exact industry in this exact number of years, you may be biasing the population you're talking to just be people out of the represented majority, right? If you want to expand kind of the diversity of your company, you got to be a little bit more open-minded to people from different backgrounds. And that gets me to the third thing that we've, you know, thought about as kind of an example is, you know, one field we impact greatly is customer success, obviously. And we don't just impact it in our company, we impact it across the whole industry. And that's a 6th fastest growing job according to LinkedIn. There's more than 100,000 CSMs out there. And it's a relatively new job. So frankly, nobody really knows what they're doing, right? It's a great job for people coming in from different backgrounds. And so we created a program of, last year called CSYOU. And the idea is basically we partnered with kind of a company that does like training academies called SV Academy. And we basically jointly with them created a program to bring people from underrepresented backgrounds, underrepresented minorities into technology, into customer success. And we train them jointly, and then we bring them into internships in our clients. And our clients basically pay for interns, and then hopefully over time, they become full-time. And you know, we've actually raised like more than $1 million for this program across all our clients. And we have, you know, dozens and dozens of students kind of coming through this program from amazing walks of life. We just did a kickoff with all the people in this program. It's unbelievably inspiring. You know, they're coming from worlds where they were the best cases. They make, you know, minimum wage or, you know, $15 an hour. And now they're in the tech world where you can actually make, you know, eventually 6 figures, right? And so this is truly changing people's lives. And it's also going to make the companies better because they're going to have amazing people that are going to do a great job, but also show them that talent isn't just looking like one kind of person, right? There's so much talent out there that your eyes are blind to right now, right? So that idea, I think, of just equality and feminism is something that, you know, I believe we can do a lot more in a Gainsight, but is super important to us personally and hopefully to a lot of other people as well.
That's so cool. I'll fill you in later, but we're doing something very, very similar with Barrows for SD. Yeah, well, for SDRs, we're doing the same thing, right?
That's awesome.
Where we looked at the data and people of color showed up and performed worse than, you know, at entry level, right? Than their white counterparts. And, you know, I was like, nobody has any experience. So how do we, Bets, give these candidates an advantage in a hugely disadvantaged situation? So we partnered with John Barrows and Morgan Ingram and So now we're putting these candidates through their training program with additional training through Betts and Barrows to help them get jobs and start a career in sales. So, we're relatively new in the program. We launched it about, a few months ago. And so I'll keep you posted.
Oh, that is so cool. Yeah, we should totally compare notes on that. That's really awesome. I love that you're doing that.
Well, and same with you. And I'm going to look that up. Yours feels like a larger scale than ours, but it's super, super, super cool. And, the thing I really was interested in, like one of the things that had brought you to my mind, right? Like I always see you out there and you're just really a huge thought leader and very passionate clearly about what you do. And when I saw, obviously I also just moved to Austin and we have a relationship with Vista, and I saw that you sold your company to Vista. And I was like, wow, right? First of all, think very highly of those folks. And also, it's an interesting, you don't see a ton of companies where, like, I don't see a lot where I know the CEO personally and, they make a decision to go to private equity, right? Usually it's some hired gun that's brought in later on. And, and so I was like, wow, and we talked a little bit about this and, I really respect and admire the decision that you made. And, I would love to hear more about it and, what the next version of private equity and growth looks like for Gainsight.
Totally. Yeah. And, private equity in terms like that, obviously there's a million different flavors of it. So Vista is pretty unique in what they do. It's a little bit more like growth equity. And basically the background is, we launched our company in 2013 and obviously kind of had to create this market with lots of other people, lots of partners, and created this amazing category together with many, many allies outside of Gainsight. And it's been awesome, but we think we're just getting started. And actually customer success is just like starting to become more mainstream. And frankly, it's like the teams are growing and, people are starting to see the need for software, which is how we make money. And we think it's going to show up in lots of different industries. And so we believe that like we're in the early innings, even though we're kind of 7.5 years in. That's the downside of like creating categories. The early days, it takes a while, right? And now we're in that world where it's just getting good. We're at the scale now that, we're like, hey, we could go public. We could stay private for a little longer. And I have a lot of friends who've taken companies public. And that's something, honestly, personally, I'd love to do someday, whether Gainsight or otherwise. And I know that it's important to do it at the right time, when your company's really ready and you feel like you've got the right infrastructure and enough different product lines and you've got the understanding of your forecasting and all that. And it felt like we needed a couple more years to be what I would call a great, public company, right? And something that, we do aspire to. And we needed a few things to be in place to get there. One is just like a little more time as the market matures. Second is actually continue to be more operationally rigorous. That's something that you have to, as you get more mature, you have to do really, really well. And then third thing is keep building out the portfolio, because we think customer success isn't just an individual team. It's really a company-wide mindset. So we now have a portfolio of different products to help like product managers measure how people are using your product, to help salespeople find upsell opportunities in accounts, things like that. And so we wanted to kind of, basically let the market mature, build out our operational rigor and kind of, build out our multi-product story. One approach is doing that in the public markets. One challenge I've seen from a lot of companies is if you make a misstep while you're trying to build, it's challenging, right? And so
you're opening the kimono for sure, right?
Yeah, exactly. And it's okay. It works out certainly for a lot of companies. And so we want to do that eventually. But we wanted some time to do it in the right way and also a great partner. And Vista, uniquely, we knew them because 25 of their portfolio companies use Gainsight. So we had this incredible relationship and we always noticed those companies were incredibly operationally disciplined. They're very long-term oriented and they had built out multi-product suites, both kind of organically, but also in some cases through M&A. And so we'd honestly had this great relationship with Vista. And at some point late last year, they said, hey, we'd love to partner with you, and made a very nice offer financially. And so for us, it was great because, the employees of Gainsight that worked so hard got, some nice liquidity, which was a very nice holiday present at the end of the year.
Yeah, merry, happy holidays, I guess, right?
Happy holidays. And then on top of that, we got the chance to really double down. Vista's playbook with us is, investing more, actually accelerating the hiring. We're going to be hiring a ton of people and really just trying to double down on this business and accelerate as the market matures, build out more products and just get more operationally rigorous. So we're really kind of honestly couldn't have picked a better partner. So I think this stuff is pretty situational depending on who the firm you're talking to is and also what your aspirations are as a company. there's obviously some private equity situations that are more your stereotypical, come into a very mature company, cut costs, you know, et cetera, et cetera. That's not at all this. It's like night and day. But, you know, this actually is a pretty unique playbook. We've been really impressed so far.
Yeah, they absolutely do. And, you know, I think that you're the type of entrepreneur that a lot of people aspire to be. And, you know, with the goal of going public and, you know, getting all of the things in a row, I'm curious, right? Because obviously Vista, it makes a lot of sense. You guys had the distributed work model beforehand with the different hubs and the different cities. And, you know, a lot of the things that I see in Vista, you guys were already doing and right. You now have the opportunity to really double down on. But yeah, I'm curious, right? Because, you know, I love the kind of back channel reference that you had the ability to do on all the other companies, right? That they, and you know, obviously they invested a significant amount of capital and allowed you and your employees to have a significant amount of liquidity. No, on the other side, in terms of the, you know, how many companies did you talk to, right? Did you end up talking to other, you clearly looked at the public route, you know, were there, did you do a full vetting process of other firms when you landed with Vista?
Yeah. So over the years, I've gotten to know most of the private equity firms because many of their portfolio companies use Gainsight.
Yep.
So I kind of just knew them that way. And a lot of friends in, you know, private equity and all that stuff. So I had a lot of familiarity to it. But the short answer is no, we didn't do a process. We actually, we knew Vista so well. They sort of had such a unique fit for us. And they came to us with a very attractive offer. So honestly, sometimes you just know it's right. And, you know, we knew that this is the right one. And so we did use an investment banker to just kind of work through a lot of the details because there's a ton of legal documents and all those kinds of things.
A lot of red lines, right?
I'm not that good at all that stuff. So we hired a great investment banker, Catalyst, which is a very good firm. But we basically decided, no, we're just going to work with Vista.
Yeah, that's really cool. That was my guess, actually, when I thought about this, that was what I was thinking, like most likely happened. So such an interesting, cool story. And I can't wait to continue to follow you and all your success. And you know what I would love to end with today is just your advice to other entrepreneurs out there, you know, as they think about starting, building, selling, you know, all the things that happen with companies. Leave us with something, you know, epic.
Oh my gosh. I don't know if there's anything epic, but I'll give you two altitudes of advice. One is kind of a little bit more tactical and very actionable, and one's more philosophical. So the philosophical one is that I do think there's just a tremendous value in understanding who you are and why you do what you do, right? And so if you can't answer the personal why, I think it's hard to get to anything else. And so what is the why? And you can use that. There's a method like five whys. So you say, okay, you're doing a startup. Why are you doing a startup? You know, let's say, oh, I want to build a great company. Why do you want to build a great company? I want to take a company public. Why do you want to take a company public? What's the why? What's the why, right? And like getting to that depth of understanding of what are those things of like, maybe it's like in my case, a little bit trying to impress your parents, right? Or maybe it's like, and it just being honest about that, like a therapist, right? Hopefully, and if you have the chance, get it, you know, getting a therapist or coach to help you with that. And I don't think you can ever really build a great company until you understand why. Now at the tactical level or the day-to-day, the one thing I would say for me that's worked really well, and maybe it worked for you, maybe not, is, I mean, as a listener, maybe it works for you, is I think that every time somebody needs help in your ecosystem is a great opportunity for you. So as much as you can, every time somebody asks for help, if you can do it, try to help them. Every person looking for advice, every person looking for a job, every person that wants to get feedback, every single time, that's a gift for you, not just for them. And I would just say, take advantage of every chance you get to help people, and it'll make you feel good, and it'll probably help you long-term too.
Well, it's interesting because this is a prime example, right? You know, I reached out, we hadn't talked to each other in a while, and I said, oh, will you be willing to do my podcast? And you're like, absolutely, Carolyn, happy to help. And it's so great to see you. And oh, by the way, YPO, that he for she thing.
Yeah.
I think it's pretty cool. You know, I think a lot of us in YPO, especially my forum, has five women in it, by the way.
Oh my gosh, what a great forum. That's awesome.
Yeah, it's a Northern California forum. So it's like, you know, obviously all YPOers are badass in their own right, but it's a really, really cool forum of, you know, women and men. And, you know, we'd been talking about like kind of what is going on with this organization? When are they going to get with it? And So, you know, it's a very good, you know, positive step in the right direction.
Agreed.
Yeah.
That's awesome. No, I love that. That's so great. It's inspiring to see what you built with your business, and it's great to be here. So thanks for having me on.
Well, thanks for joining.
Growth Unscripted is powered by Bets. From fully customizable end-to-end recruiting services to a platform featuring 15,000 vetted job-seeking professionals, Bets connects the most extraordinary go-to-market talent with the most innovative companies in the world. Be sure to subscribe for more episodes with badass executives and check us out at BetsRecruiting.com for more information on how we build companies.